Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. We are live from WWDC and the surrounding area. We are here with coverage brought to you by iMazing, Smile, Carbon Copy, Cloner, Sanebox, and Direct Mail. Thanks to all of them for sponsoring us and making sure that we're all here to cover everything we're talking about. I'm here today with Dave Hamilton.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey.
It's a crazy day.
It's such a crazy day. It's been like all input overloaded all the time.
But that's what we expect from day number one of WWDC.
Yes, that's always like, what happens.
That's what happens.
Yes.
It's how it should be. It's good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tim comes out and we have like the morning public presentation for everybody. And then we have what I always call the nuts and bolts in the afternoon, the State of the Union. For developers, the one that's not publicly streamed but tends to be the more interesting of the two if you're looking at where we are with iOS and what the future looks like. So that's like that was the part that was interesting to me because we dug into some of the stuff that this morning kind of got glossed over a little bit.
And that's the point of State of the Union, is the keynotes for everyone.
Yes.
And they'll do a little something for the developers, but it's mostly for everyone and not just developers. And then the State of the Union dives much deeper into some of that stuff. And sometimes there's some revelations, and I think we'll get to a couple of those while
yes.
we talk here today.
Yeah. So for people who maybe haven't seen the stream, we got previews of the new version of macOS and the new version of iOS and a new OS called iPad OS.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because the iPad has always been different from the iPhone.
Yes.
There are things that the iPad, especially in recent years, has been able to do. Split screen, slide over, those types of things that simply aren't part of the iPhone's functionality, but it's all been called iOS. I think today's announcement of iPad OS as its own thing is more of an acknowledgement of where they've been going already and where they already are. Yes, it adds more things, like you can have multiple instances of the same app now, which is great, because I think without that, the whole, we used to call it Marzipan until today, we call it Project Catalyst.
Yep.
But, you know, like there needs to be a tighter bond between, or a tighter link between macOS and that which runs on the iPad, so now iPad OS,
mm-hmm.
so that these cross-platform apps and development for them actually makes sense to do.
Right.
And so I think it makes perfect sense. I think it's great.
It really does, except what I was sort of wondering about was if that means that we're going to get iPhone OS to go with iPad OS. Like, I feel like if they're going to separate them, they should separate them and just say, like, all this stuff is iOS, you know, at its core. The way we talk about, like, Mac OS
and TVOS
is Unix at its core. Like, but all of this stuff, like, starts as iOS, and then, you know, this bit of stuff makes it TVOS. This bit of stuff makes it iPad OS. This bit of stuff makes it iPhone OS.
Well, that is actually what we have, right?
Yeah.
Because the core of all of them, TVOS, macOS, iOS, iPad OS, and watchOS, is all the same Unix. And I think collectively it's called Foundation.
Yes.
Or Foundation Kit.
Something like that.
Where there's all these APIs that are common to everything. And when we say APIs, we mean the things that developers, the work that Apple does so that developers can just say, I want a thing, and the code is taken
yeah.
care of for them.
Like the share button.
The share,
example,
right. Yeah, exactly.
I want a share button. I include that in my code, and then when you hit the share button, the OS takes over and says, which thing do you want? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, yeah, it is weird to have iOS as a thing that is, well, only for the iPhone and iPod Touch.
Yes.
Right? I don't think there's anything else that iOS runs on anymore. Older iPads, sure, but
right.
you know, in terms of you know currently shipping new devices.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So,
because it seems odd to me that they would that one of them would sort of get split off, but that the other one wouldn't get split off.
Right.
And then the other thing we talked about, well, the other announcement we got this morning was dark mode coming to iOS. We don't know if it's coming to iPadOS. They didn't really make that clear.
Oh, that's been clear.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's definitely there for iPadOS. And it's, you know, to me, it's an extension of what we have currently called Smart Invert.
Yes.
Right? And it takes it much further. And if developers use that, this new thing that they talked about in the keynote called Swift UI, where if you're writing your code in Swift, you can write your user interface elements, your buttons, your windows, your lists, in a way that will then work on all devices with very, very little code compared to the way it used to be.
Yes.
And if you, but in what we learned in the State of the Union is if you use Swift UI and describe your colors instead of stating your colors, when someone switches to dark mode, you get those, there are analogs for all the
yes.
colors in light mode that are in dark mode. So you get all this stuff automatically. And I say you as a developer,
yeah.
but what it means is it makes it way easier for developers, especially developers of new apps. Of existing apps, there's a lot of refactoring and throwing
sure.
out of old code and writing of new code. but, you know, when you write a new app, you get to write all new code. So
right.
It makes it way easier for dark mode to just sort of be supported across
right.
the board.
So the thing that's interesting about, like, doing something like that, you know, for free, basically, is that then dark mode is implemented correctly. And I think everybody's seen at least an app or two trying out dark mode in Mojave and seeing that, like, you know, yeah, all around the window is black, but the middle is bright white, even though I told everything dark mode, you know, and being able to have some of that from the get-go and
yeah.
make that work is something very, very easy to do.
And that's also coming to macOS. Like, again, new apps will be able to
yes.
take advantage of it. And, of course, any of these apps coming through this Project Catalyst, Marzipan cross-platform
mm-hmm.
thing will also sort of inherit the dark
yeah.
mode stuff that's built in. So
yeah,
yeah.
which is going to be great. We did get a peek at the new version of macOS, which is called Catalina, which is a really long name and I'm not jazzed about. But the desktop picture was really pretty.
It is, yeah. it's less syllables than El Capitan, right?
Yeah.
No, it's the same. Okay, well,
whatever. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay.
Which is why I already called it El Cap. I can't wait to see what this gets nicknamed.
Yeah, we're just going back to the cats, I guess.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, is,
yeah. macOS Cat.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Yes.
A couple of things in macOS are really, well, two. One is Sidecar. I like that they
yes.
built in this native functionality to use your iPad as your second screen.
Did it feel a little Sherlocky to you, though?
Oh, it's very Sherlocky because
okay.
there's several apps that do this. But but the thing is, you know, I'm a geek. I know of these apps. I have used them. They've always been a little wonky. It's always like, oh, is this going to work with the new version of the OS? Like, where we are? What do I have to do to set it up? Because I would set this up in my hotel room. Like, I have I travel with an iPad. I
mm-hmm.
have a MacBook Air. It would make perfect sense. And I always think in the back of my head before I travel, oh, I should set that up. I never do.
Yeah.
So now it's automatically set up for me because it's not the kind of thing I would use every day. So I think having it just as table stakes with the OS is a good thing. So,
yeah. I'm very interested in finding out how that gets implemented sort of over time because, for example, just earlier today at lunch, we were talking about, I'm not going to name drop people I was eating lunch with, but we were talking about the 17-inch MacBook Pro and how people loved that machine. There are still people, you know, clinging desperately to theirs until the last bit of life has been squeezed from it because they can't get rid of all that real estate. And, you know, and if you trade the heft of that 17-inch machine for a more recent MacBook, whether it's 13 or 15-inch, even a Retina 13-inch screen is going to be more acreage, pixels per inch, than what you have on that older computer. And when you can team that up with an iPad of a reasonable size, and most people travel with both,
yep.
then maybe that's how they're filling that hole. And the 16-inch laptop rumor that goes around, like, I think today pretty thoroughly debunked that, because why would I want a weird-sized screen when I could have, two?
Yeah, a 13 and a 12-inch iPad
is a dual-screen setup.
That's a killer travel setup.
Yeah.
And like, a no-brainer in a hotel room.
Exactly.
You just boom and you're done.
Right.
And honestly, if you're thinking about that and you want even more, 90% of every hotel room I walk into has a TV with an HDMI port that's usable.
Yes.
And you could, with one cable from your Mac, man, now you've got a three-screen setup.
Exactly.
And, you know, you've got everything you need. So.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that, and part of that is, you know, solving kind of the travel issue, but also, you know, making it more portable, because then, sure. like, for example, we're sitting here recording this now with my iPad.
Yep.
Which is not a, which, it's a Pro, but it's not a, a USB-C Pro. It's right. the previous edition Pro.
Right.
But this has been, like, this is a great setup. It's working really well. I can do all of this. And then if there's stuff I need to do with my laptop, like, I have my laptop available to me.
At the hotel.
Back at the hotel.
Yeah.
And so, but, like, to be out and about, like, my iPad and my keyboard does 90 to 99% of what I want to do. And a lot of people are sort of in that same space, or take the iPad with you everywhere and then have a mini at home, you know, for people who, for people who want to do that. Now, for people who are in the market for a new computer.
Well, I want to, there's one more, I want to get to that.
Yes.
Okay.
We will.
The other sort of big change to macOS in terms of the apps that you'll use.
Yes.
It, with macOS 10.15 Catalina is iTunes, right, is broken out into four apps now.
Oh, we were going to get there because I got my way. I got trolled and then I got my way.
So, right, so there's the music app, which is just music, podcasts, which is just podcasts, but also is adding machine learning to be able to sort search for the contents of a podcast. So if you want to find the show where we talked about Sidecar, you could search for that. Even if we chose not to put it in the show notes, it would find this episode.
Right.
That's cool.
It doesn't have to be in the title. It doesn't have to be in the description.
Yeah. And so that's cool. And I assume it's doing it on device, because everything Apple does is on device and private and all that good stuff. And then the TV app to do all your TV and movies. And I said there was four, and it's because sync functionality is taken out of any of these apps now. And is put into the Finder. So when you plug in your device, you see it listed in the Finder, which is great. It doesn't try to launch iTunes anymore. Thank goodness.
There was applause for that, there was, for people who didn't see the keynote.
Deserved applause, yeah.
Yes. Like, as soon as they said, you know, it's in the Finder, you, like, at least, because I was, I'm sure it was in the room the same way. Like, everybody in, at Alt where I was watching was like, oh, and it just clicked.
And,
and then applause over here as well.
Yep. And so the Finder does this. But most of us are still going to want something more. And this is where I'm going to lead a nice little segue into our sponsor that we'll talk about for the week, but for during this episode, which is iMazing. iMazing has always been the iTunes alternative, or, you know, I call it what it picks up where iTunes leaves off. Well, now there ain't no more iTunes. You really want something that will really let you manage your iOS devices from your Mac and do wonderful things with them. And that's what iMazing does. It's the Swiss Army knife, right?
It is.
Of iPhone management and iPad management. Desktop app for macOS or Windows that lets you take entire control of your iOS devices and your data. You can make Time Machine style backups where you get, you know, to restore from different points. You can easily transfer documents, media, and content, but you can also dig into things like the system files. You can access your device and battery diagnostics and more. All your data, of course, stays local on your computer, or if you want to save it on an external drive of your choice, that's fine. The latest update, version 2.9, focuses on messages, SMS and iMessage, yes, and WhatsApp chats. You can browse and search through all your messages. You can export them to beautifully rendered PDFs. The entire rendering engine was rewritten from the ground up to support loading even very large amounts of messages and to generate those PDFs natively in no time. Printouts include image attachments and emojis and can be customized to paper size and scale and all that stuff. There really are a lot of use cases for iMazing's message export features, documenting interactions with clients, providing evidence in, you know, legal proceedings, recovering lost messages. So you can really, like, save this stuff. Think about this. Saving your important messages as PDFs that you know will be readable on any device in the future. Doesn't matter what you have or any of that. So you've got to go check it out. Go to imazing.com/TDO and you get a 30% discount on all licenses right there. imazing.com/TDO, 30% discount on all licenses. Our thanks to the folks at DigiDNA and iMazing for helping us and sponsoring us this week.
I love iMazing. Like, not because they're a sponsor, but just in general, like, I use it constantly because it's the best way to make sure that you're getting backed up what you want to back up, or what you want deleted, or, you know, whenever you need to, like, manage anything on your phone or on your iPad.
It's the best way to get granular control over
what's
going on.
It really is. Yeah. Because some of the stuff that gets backed up normally, you don't really need. Some of it you do. And you get to decide all of that. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you could install your new copy of iMazing on a shiny new Mac just as soon as you take out a second mortgage.
Yeah, so this new Mac Pro, right? I got to see it in person. I did not get to touch it, but I got to see it. This was not a hands-on room. Well, Apple had... the only thing you could have hands-on with was an iPad that either they had AR... built these AR apps using... I can't remember what the name of the engine is. I know I have it somewhere here. But whatever the new... rendering thing is. Yeah. So they built these apps. They had the metal frame, the stainless steel frame of the new Mac Pro,
uh-huh.
but with an iPad in AR mode, you could see the whole thing and open it up and, like, dig in. And so you could sort of get your hands on without, you know, them having somebody, like, putting their mitts all over it. And then of course, they had, you know, these new Mac Pros running stuff too, so they were actually there, but you couldn't touch those. And then they had just the stand, and with the AR you could see the stand, of course, for the display, which might cost you more than the Mac Pro rather, but once you put the iPad up in AR mode, you could see how a display attached to it and how the stand came apart and went back together. It's an amazing stand. It's $1,000 stand.
Which was, to me personally, one of the funniest moments of the keynote was, by the way, you can buy the Visa mount for this for $199, and the stand is $999. Bye!
Yeah, and they ran off stage as fast as they could.
I swear he was halfway off stage when he said that number and then ducked.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, even the Mac Pro is not cheap, right? It starts at $59.99, if memory serves me correctly, and I'm looking up my notes here. But
it is a monster of a machine from an objective standpoint.
Correct.
The amount of throughput, the amount of horsepower, the amount of processing, the amount of graphics capability.
Well, the modularity of it, like, looks to be pretty cool. We need to see it. We need to get away from the reality distortion field a little bit and all of that. But objectively, I agree. This is a killer machine. I went and saw a demo where they had taken the audio for How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
Right? So this audio, all previously recorded, it was all done at Abbey Road Studios, and they had two orchestras, a separate percussion section, and then several other things, all recorded at 192K, and it maxed out four Macs to do this.
Yeah.
And that's how it was originally done.
Yes,
that's how you did it. That's right. And I talked to the engineer that made it all work. And he's like, yeah, you know, the problem is, if you wanted to change a mix in, you know, Orchestra 2, you'd have to switch to that Mac. And, I mean, they were all synced up together, so you could play it all back simultaneously. But it was different interfaces for each of these various sections. Because you didn't have the horsepower to process not only just playing back. Tracks is actually fairly trivial. It's the effects that you're doing on them and all of the things that are happening that really, you know, chew up the CPU. And he said with the new, you know, the 28-core Mac Pro, he just imported all four sets and merged them into one Pro Tools session, and he was finished. He thought there was going to be more to do.
Yeah.
And he said no. He said, and even with more to do, he still would have been happy to finally get it all into
one
interface, right?
And see it all at once.
Correct.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, I knew I'd have to do some tweaking or whatever.
Yeah.
Turns out, no. He said he just merged them and hit play and was like, oh, okay. And he even said to me, because he was showing me, and there's, you know, I think about 300 tracks or something, and he didn't put, like, cool little markers or scroll points in, so he sort of had to manually scroll around, and he's like, you know, if I had more time with this, I would have put those markers in so that I could jump to orchestra number two or orchestra number one and very quickly move around. He's like, but I just merged these together and it worked. And so here we are. It's like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
But like, being able to do that all at once.
Yeah.
Correct. It really, right. like, it that highlighted the power of this for me.
Yeah.
As, like, okay, that's a thing right there. Like, that's pretty cool.
It's, and it's, like, fundamentally the difference, the thing that I thought about this was that at every different sort of unveiling of the next hunk of hardware that went into this, like, we've given it this unbelievable graphics throughput. It's this monster card we've magically developed. There's two
of them. Put in two if you want.
Yeah. And I don't know how I feel about the triumphant return of the cheese grater design aesthetic. But,
it very much is that, even in person.
At least the curved handles, because I at one point had to carry around about a dozen of the old ones, and they clocked in, according to Apple, at like 49 pounds, I think, was the previous iteration. And those handles hurt to pick up and move those computers around.
Yeah.
It was not fun. So I was glad to see that they actually think people might ever want to pick this up, because the handles seemed much more comfortable. And maybe you don't have to pick it up at all, because there's an optional install on the bottom where you can put wheels and just roll that sucker around.
Yeah, one guy was saying he can't wait to put wheels on one and like sit on it and tool around the office. And I said, just make sure you don't go by your boss's door if he's the one that signed off on paying for it.
The purchase order,
because it's probably going to be a $10,000 machine, you know, when you spec it out the way you want to spec
it out. By the time, yeah.
Yeah.
And the way you want to spec it out, like, that's the thing that I was sort of, you know, thinking about when we were talking about this before, was this machine is not a machine. This is not a machine that people buy. This is a machine that Pixar buys. This is a machine that ILM and Weta, like, you know, Abbey Road Studios is going to have, like, a small army of these, one, you know, one per room
totally.
To record the hundreds of things. And, like, so this is not the machine for people. And this is the thing that I think, like, we'll get into a bunch of this later, but I have this thought that what's really going on is that people, when we got the iMac initially, remember, it was a gumdrop. And it was a cute little computer.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you need a real computer, you buy the tower.
Right.
But if you just need a cute little computer to do your cute little computer stuff, you get a gumdrop. And
that's
I feel like the
anymore.
iPad, I feel like the iMac never really shook that off. And so if you want a real computer, you don't buy an iMac. And that's where all of the hating on we don't have a Pro machine is coming from, is exactly that. Because, like, the iMac Pro, the iMac 5K.
I was going to say, the current, even just the 2019
machines.
Straight iMac, you can get 8 cores in that thing.
Right.
Like, who needs that much or more? Like, some people do. Like,
well,
there is
Facebook
an answer.
Facebook doesn't need 8 cores.
Right.
Like, online banking doesn't need 8 cores.
Correct. And even the new Mac Mini, where you can get it with 6 cores for, you know, far less than $1,500, is, like, way more machine than most people need. And you're right. It used to be, if you needed any sort of horsepower, your only option was a Mac Pro.
Right. Because then you can swap out the pieces too. Like, I'm putting $5,000 or $6,000 into this machine, but I know that the internals are going to go through 2 or 3 or more iterations before I get to the point where the chassis is somehow end of
life.
It
is end of life.
And now I have to buy a new outside and then iterate the inside a few times, because that used to be the way. Like,
all computers work.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of people who have an emotional attachment to that. To your point, right? The iMac, for some folks, has not shaken that gumdrop aesthetic
in their
brains.
Yeah, it's not a real computer. I'm air quoting this for people who can't
see
the
podcast. I mean, really is way more of a real computer than most of us need.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessarily getting the cred that it deserves, because people are looking at that and going, yeah, that's nice, but I need a Pro machine. Well, that Pro machine is going to be $6,000.
Minimum.
If you want the entry.
And most people won't order the entry level. No, I mean, you shouldn't.
No.
If you need that machine, you probably are going to want more than just that.
You'll need that second card.
But
you'll
will help some of the folks that have yet to give up on this. It will help them get over the idea that they need a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
Because when it's $7,500, and we sort of alluded to the display, that's a whole other beast. And most people that even the people that need the Mac Pro, most of them do not need the what do they call it? The
MX
Pro Display XDR.
XDR.
Yeah. And they don't need that. And now, it's a $5,000 display.
And let's just point out that that should be its own separate headline that Apple got back into the screen game.
Ish. For some people.
Right. Well, like, they're like, back into it. Not for everybody.
Not for everybody.
But right. for a while, you know, remember, like, they took minis and they hooked them up to these giant LG displays because that's how hard Apple was out of the market. Like, we make the iMac screen and that's it. And if you don't want the iMac screen... Like, the only way Apple was ever going to sell you a monitor for quite a while was if you let them slap a whole computer on the back of it.
Right.
It was the only way you could get a display from Apple.
It was actually cheaper to get a 5K display with an iMac attached.
Than not to get the display.
So,
but Apple is back in that game.
It'll be interesting to see if this is the only place in that game they stay.
Right.
Right.
Because the comparison we got during the address was a $42,000 monitor.
Right.
So this one is only six.
Five with plus you've got to, unless you're going to have pay somebody to hold it up, which might be cheaper,
than
buying the stand for $1,000. Yeah, I mean, it's massively over-engineered. But again, for the people that need it, it's a gorgeous display.
Right.
What did they say? The cooling and the power can run a full 1,000 nits of brightness.
Yes,
100% of the time, which to me means that you can go both blind and broke simultaneously.
See, right there. Then you can't see what your Vista balance looks like anymore.
Nope.
So, yeah.
They're thinking of
that's
you.
Apple improving the customer experience.
I want to mention, I know we're probably out of time, but there is one thing that came up during the State of the Union that I want to highlight for people. And that is that they mentioned that Catalina makes the system volume read-only. Now, that's interesting on two counts. One, a read-only system volume. Two, system volume? Right now with macOS, we have one volume upon which everything is stored.
Yeah.
The system, your applications, your documents, your preferences, all of that stuff. With Catalina, that changes again. And this is where APFS... is super handy because you get the way APFS, the file system, works is there's a blob of storage and you can sort of allocate it any way you want.
Yes.
And so for Apple to, when Catalina is installed, just say, hey, I'm going to treat part of this blob differently, doesn't mean that your drive has to be reformatted or anything. It's a virtual designation. Mm-hmm. But there will now be two partitions.
Three containers, we'll call them.
Yeah, containers, right. There's two. Well, recovery.
Well, because we have recovery now, which is that sort of the
yes, that's true.
The precursor to this. That's what I'm looking for. It's been a long day.
No, you're right. There will be three. There will be recovery.
We've seen recovery already. Like you restart with the Option key held down, and suddenly magically you've got this recovery volume that you didn't know was there.
Fair.
And that, like, so for some people may have seen that, may be familiar with that. Some people more than others. I apologize if you've been in that position.
It's not fun. Yeah.
But the recovery volume is a thing that we've seen, and I believe. That got a lot easier to access and manage with the advent of APFS.
With APFS, of course.
So this is just the next evolution of APFS, is we're going to take the system and we're going to kind of fence that off a little
bit
as well.
That's right. So
tall fence. It's like low fence in the front yard.
We'll find out. I'm interested to see how it all works. I will say this. If your machine was upgraded from what are we on now? I can't even remember.
Mojave. 14.
Right. So if your machine was upgraded to what was probably High Sierra, right?
Yeah.
That was when APFS joined us, right?
I think so.
Yes, because
we've
had APFS on the Mac for a year plus now.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So about a year in, so this fall on Mac Geek Gab, we started seeing a lot of people having weird volume problems.
Yep.
And the solution was clone the drive, wipe it clean, so that you have a true native APFS, not
from
this weird
start.
Converted from HFS Plus thing. And my feeling is, if you haven't done a clean install yet, going into Catalina, now you're talking about extra volumes and stuff. It will work for many of you, but keep backups because... There will be more wonkiness, I think.
And we should, and I mean, that's where our sponsors come in handy.
That's right.
Carbon Copy Cloner.
That's right.
Is where it's at.
Yep.
And you can do that, like, a backup, however you want to do it, you can do that backup on any sort of external hard drive as long as it has enough space to hold
your data,
the contents of your drive.
That's
so
it.
You can go buy a terabyte drive and back up your half a terabyte's worth of data
totally
on half of it, and then do whatever you want to do with the rest. Maybe you have an iTunes backup, you copy movies over to it that you purchased, whatever. So you can do all that kind of stuff, but like, it's important to remember that those are things that we want to make sure that you're doing. If you have questions about backup, if you have questions about any of the other stuff that we saw here today, not tonight, obviously, because we all have many, many things to do and drink. And we will take all of those questions. You can leave comments in the show notes for things that we should be on the lookout for, or things that we should be asking people, or people we should be asking questions of. And you can also email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us on Twitter at TMO Daily and at Mac Observer Live.
At Mac Observer Live, too, yeah.
To talk to us while we're all here on the ground. Dave and I will both be here until Friday. And I would very much like to thank our sponsors again today. Our sponsors are, as you heard about, iAmazing, also Smile, again, Carbon Copy Cloner, SaneBox, and Direct Mail, and they're the reason we're all able to be here at WWDC. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. Be excellent to each other.